Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of athletic subscribers? Who wouldn't? Our lot are great. They're intelligent. They have demonstrably long attention spans for all of those long reads. And that means they're almost certainly the ABC ones you're looking for. Imagine your brand front and centre on the Totally Football Show, or Talk of the Devils, or Football Clichés. You can advertise with us now. Our highly skilled and effortlessly charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you, whether you want a single ad on View from the Lane or full title sponsorship on our Women's World Cup show. We've got something for everyone. Contact partnerships at theathletic.com. That's partnerships at theathletic.com.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm delighted to be joined today by JJ Bull the Bullet.
You're starting this whole thing again?
Yeah, just because the last one, it'd be easier for them to do. They can just cut the whole thing and they can start with this one.
Okay.
Jonathan Dog McKenzie.
Hello.
That's right. Now listen, we spoke about so many things today, didn't we? So many things. Things such as Man City Arsenal and the FA Cup. Psychology. And the production of a win. What about Wrexham? Yeah, they played a good game at the weekend too. And we talk about Football Manager. Obviously, Sean Dyche is the new manager of Everton, so we scale the heights of Dyche. And some Serie A, because Milan are in crisis. So we discussed them. Also, transfers and potatoes. That's right.
And things we cut out included why you can't kill and eat your pets.
Yeah. There was a lot of that, wasn't
How
there?
How to pronounce the word negotiation.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you want to learn things such as why you can't kill and eat your pets, or how to pronounce words properly, get the Athletic at theathletic.com/TIFO. Theathletic.com/TIFO for comprehensive lists of which pets you can kill and eat. No, but they got good. They got really top-level football analysis. Very impressive stuff. That's theathletic.com/TIFO. But for now...
Because the stuff we missed out is, like, you couldn't keep a salmon in your bath. But if you did, it'd be fine to eat it, but... You know?
I'll leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace.
The salmon in JJ's bath.
The to begin, of course, than with the FA Cup. John, did you know that the FA Cup has so much history that you can't even talk about all of it because there's so much and it's dripping with poignancy?
I believe so, yes. It's often said.
Do you care about the past, JJ? Or the future?
Yes, all. Well, as we know, the future and the past and the present are all one.
Yes.
And it depends on...
Much like the flat circle you're wearing on your jumper today.
Well, that's a compact disc, Joe.
A CD top you've got.
Yes, yeah. Something that was very popular in the 90s.
That's your tribute act to ZZ Top, isn't it? It's called CD Top, and you dress up in CDs.
No, but I like ZZ Top a lot. They're really good.
Yeah.
Do you know that the only member of ZZ Top without a beard is called Frank Beard? That's true.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Did you know that Arsenal may well have suffered a psychological defeat at the hands of Manchester City as well as a real defeat? 1-0 Arsenal, of course, yes. In the FA Cup on Friday. A goal from Nathan Ake, assisted by Jack Grealish.
A lovely goal by Ake. Lovely, well taken finish. Slotted it into the only little bit. It's like he's playing one of those games where you have to find the exact part of the goal to put it in.
Nice.
Wrong footed as well.
Was it wrong footed?
Yeah, it was right footed. Yeah. But then the thing with this game, I think it's been talked about a lot by other people, but it is relevant in that Guardiola is obviously not very happy with what's going on with his team just now. So he's put out whether these are the players he trusts the most, or it's a wake up to other players to try and get them in to get them ready to play in the future games going forward. He put out a fully like full strength team.
Fully stocked.
Yeah, that's a team. Apart from Ortega in goal, I mean, Rico Lewis counts as a full strength right back now. He's.
Can I say, though, I remember when I looked at the lineups for this game and I thought the same thing. Oh, Man City first team. Arsenal have rotated four or five options here. But it's quite hard to say what Man City's first team is because they're all sort of first team players.
He does it on purpose, yeah, because that's the thing. He buys really good players, and you'll see Arsenal doing it now. They're linked with loads of players like Caicedo and Declan Rice, and that all we'll talk about at some point. Mm. But the idea is not that they then just go into that first team slot. So you have a bigger squad with amazing players, and then to keep them happy, you have to rotate. That's why Man City players, if you look on. If you go on Who Scored, for example, and look how many games they play a season, it tends to be that players like Phil Foden or Riyad Mahrez or whoever, they start about 21, 22 games in the league. And then they'll sit on the bench for a lot more, maybe come off sometimes. They'll play some Champions League games, but not all of them. And so, like Guardiola's talked about it, it's to do with squad management. To keep them all happy, you've got to have loads of high-level players to be the best team possible. But you need to make sure that they are both match fit and happy playing. And it gives you more of a team. It makes a squad more of a team than just the team being a team, so it's useful for that.
Yeah, well, arguably, Guardiola's biggest strength as a coach is being able to have all of those players and manage them all at the same time.
Keep them all happy.
Because I think most other coaches would have to have a starting 11.
It's an interesting new time, though, isn't it, whereby in the past we would often have conversations about strong personalities and excellent players on the bench wanting to start every game. You may well think that actually the best professionals in the game now might be quite happy to start 22 games and rest their body and not.
But that's just league. They play so many competitions. You've got the FA Cup now. They're playing that. Like City expect to get to the final of every competition.
Yeah.
Not League Cup this year, but they've basically won it every single time, apart from last season as well. So that is, I had a really good point there. What was it?
Such a shame. I wonder what it was.
No. Oh, I know what it was. It's to do with Sir Alex Ferguson. And like Guardiola, obviously, he takes a lot of inspiration from other managers. And one of them is how Alex Ferguson managed to keep Manchester United at the top. And United would rotate their team always. That one player would, one team would start, and the next game it would be someone different. Just one player might change from time to time, and it's always. And it's to encourage to keep players fit, but also to make sure standards don't drop. And then, like you know, the team you think about, you'd have like Cole, York, and Giggs, then Beckham, and like, all the big boys like playing at one time. That like dream lineup. I think Duncan Alexander had this stat once from Opta. Well, he now works with us at the Athletic. Talked about how like the actual 11 is only played together like once, and it's actually just a mixture of all the other players like Blomqvist and then Stam, and all these guys would drop in and out.
Well, you think the heroes of the 99 Champions League final were Sheringham and Solskjaer, who were theoretically the backup strikers.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's it. And then you keep them like useful. Like Solskjaer, very useful as a sub coming on a lot. Like Foden,
they called him
a super sub. The baby-faced assassin, they used to call him.
Yes.
But yeah.
I think it's interesting as well because so many people like to rag on Guardiola for having a really, really strict system and sometimes at the expense of creativity, apparently.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that you do get from that kind of approach is that no one is bigger than the system, and so you can start rotating players a lot more easily. And, you know, I think that the beauty of the Guardiola system is that you can have everyone able to play in that system, tweak things up, and have that flexibility within the system as well. So I think
it helps with youth players as well, like bringing through people like Lewis and Foden, and then maybe next season they might have like Doyle and McAtee, boys at Sheffield United, also in the FA Cup. They can come through and just play in a team that they know how to play because they're taught the principles of that system young. You think like the Ajax Barcelona Academy, it's the same thing, but the principles, not necessarily the formation, but they all know very well to play different formations. All players learn these different things, but then you can drop them into a team later. But the original point of this game, this 1-0 win for Man City, obviously good for them. Arsenal won't be that fussed, but you can see that from the team they put out. You can just see it. They don't have the squad that Man City have, so you need to find time to give some players a bit of a rest, keep momentum going for the Premier League.
Is it kind of positive defeat in that sense? Because Arsenal did rotate a lot, but they kept the game very, very... I mean, they were the better team in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, they thought they were good for... like, this is the thing, so no matter how well they played and whatever, the result has gone the way they didn't want it to. But what you have now with Arsenal is that they have been defeated by their rivals in the Premier League, who are, 7 points off? Mm-hmm. And they've come back from that before, Man City in the league, to overturn that. So although Arsenal have all the momentum and now are the favourites to win the league and they look great and, like you say, they play really well in this game, they now have that psychological defeat of knowing that when they play against them in the league properly, which I think is on the 15th of February, so quite soon, and so it's a Wednesday, they've been beaten already, so that might make them a little bit more nervous. And when you play with any sort of nerves, it's not good. You want to just be relaxed and fresher free and expect you're going to win with all the momentum. So it might be that I don't know they'll lose any momentum from losing this one game. It shouldn't really bother them.
I think both teams will take the positives, right?
Yeah.
I think Man City will say, look, we can beat Arsenal, and Arsenal will say, yeah, well, we rotated, and it was, you know, it's a competition that
we still
we could do without. Yeah, and we lost by one goal, and it could have gone differently on the day as well. So I think they'll take that.
Here's a few things dropped in by producer Steve, Mr. Henkels. That Man United 99-11, it played 19 times together in total. But there are loads of other examples. I'm on the BBC article about the best ever teams that that didn't play together or played together very rarely. England's golden generation, for example. Owen and Rooney up front. Scholes, Lampard, Gerrard, Beckham. Cole, Terry, Ferdinand, Neville. They never once started an international together with that lineup, which is amusing, given that that is exactly what we think about it. And Arsenal's Invincibles as well. Would it surprise you to learn, writes the BBC, that this side started only two league games together for the Gunners that season, and that was Henry and Bergkamp up front, Pires, Gilberto, Vieira, Ljungberg, Cole, Torre, Campbell, Lauren and Lehmann. Only twice. That's pretty crazy, isn't it? So there we go. There's a nut, a kernel of an idea within that nut. The nut has its own kernel. Now, congratulations to Manchester City, of course. Who doesn't wish them well on their way to, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. But, you know.
Follow it through.
Yeah, keep going. Is that what, you, that's what you're saying?
I'm going to save you from the wallowing that you're currently going through. But I was going to say, I really look forward to these games because I see games between teams like this where the managers are super tactical as almost like a mini series within a season, because we know that they're going to, each manager is going to try and outthink the other one, and this was another example of that. Like Arsenal came out and went man for man out of possession when Man City were in the build-up phase, which is something we've not really seen before. And then Man City came out in the second half with solutions to some of the problems. They used Rico Lewis as an inverted fullback, but they basically used him more as like a centre midfielder who dropped out. Yeah. So even in the build-up, he was starting in the middle. Usually with an inverted fullback, you'll start them flattish in the deep phase and then move them inside. So they tried that from the off, and then Arsenal had solutions to those problems, and then they brought Kyle Walker on in the second half, and he was running the line more like a classic fullback and stuff. So I really look forward to these games because I think sometimes they can be a bit boring for just people wanting to see loads of goals and stuff, but there's a lot of thought that goes into them tactically, and the beauty of these sorts of teams is that they do have the flexibility to be able to change things up mid-game in a big way and not just lose the game from doing that. So yeah, I quite enjoy these ones, so it'll be really, really interesting seeing that game on the 15th.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Also, I think it's worth saying I saw throughout the week a lot of videos pop up on YouTube or on other social video platforms of interviews of Pep Guardiola in the past and more recently praising Arteta, saying that he always learns things from him.
Yeah.
It seemed like a sort of match of equals, didn't it, in that regard?
I think so, yeah. We didn't think that was going to be the case when we first started watching Arteta, and now they are equals, and it's going to come down to personnel now, I think, often in the two matchups between the two of them.
Yeah.
Personnel and man management, handling the change in approach that Arsenal have as being the leaders as opposed to chasing. Yeah.
Does this tell us anything about Arsenal's fixture against Manchester City in the Premier League coming up?
The only thing I think it does is it might give a slight bit of attention to fans and the players that they have now lost to them, even though it shouldn't really matter because it's a rotated team and it's different competition. But it just gives a little bit of... They now have a psychological edge, very slight. I don't know how that plays out in the pitch, but it might just sit there.
A little bit, it's a confidence thing.
Because Man City are the best team, like one of the best teams in Europe, if not the best team in Europe. Mm. They're not in form just now, but they have the best players, best squad.
It's worth saying as well that this was an FA Cup game, which clearly Arteta was happier to lose than Guardiola.
Yeah.
And obviously you get the positive aspect of that, but there is also a negative one, which is when they play in the league, there's going to be a lot more weight on the Arsenal team to actually get the result than there was in the FA Cup for them to get the result. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that, I think.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, we'll look forward to that. Before we move on from the aged and weighty tournament that is the FA Cup, Wrexham 3-3 Sheffield United. This is one of the games of the weekend there, JJ Bull. Sheffield United, of course, in the Championship, Wrexham, not even in the Football League, are
they?
They're
in the National League.
They're in the National
League. But they're
top. They're top of the National yeah. League. And they do have twice the budget of all the other teams, right?
I don't know if they have twice. They have a good budget, but they've done it very well. They don't know how much money they put into buying players. People like Paul Mullen and Tom O'Connor are in decent wages and whatever, and they have to pay some money for some of them. They've got a good team that they should be top. I think their rivals tend to be Notts County.
Notts County, yeah. I think better than Wrexham.
Do you?
I'm just putting it out
wow.
there.
Wow, John with another hot take. Yeah,
every a National day League,
you do this.
A National
and then the rest
League
of the
hot take.
Of the week you Imagine go, that. Oh, I shouldn't have said that because then 100 people called me an idiot.
I've not watched them enough to know anything about Notts County.
Yeah, I've watched them a bit this season because they have a manager called Luke Williams who is very exciting.
This is Notts County?
Yeah, Notts County. I did a thread on him recently, but he's playing what people call Guardiola ball in the National League, which has been very nice to watch.
Right.
Really good manager. He'll be in the Championship next
bit like Barrow did.
Barrow Salona, yeah. Actually watched Ian Everett at the weekend as well. He's now at Bolton.
He's at Bolton, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
There we go.
Well, yeah.
All the best to Ian Everett and Luke.
Williams.
Luke Williams, yeah, yes. A name to watch
Phil
out for.
Phil Parkinson is the coach of Wrexham, is that
yes,
right?
You may recognise him from the documentary.
The swear scene.
Was he in the Sunderland one?
I don't know.
He was a Sunderland manager at one point, wasn't he? Was he?
No, does he just love documentaries?
Who is the manager for the Sunderland Till I Die?
I couldn't finish watching that.
Really?
Yeah, I just didn't care about it enough.
I haven't watched any of those series. So.
The reason I like the Wrexham one is because it's punctuated by fun. Whereas when it's 90%, look how meaningful this is, I look at it and I go, eh.
Yeah,
you just don't like football, do you? That's the thing.
No, it's not that. I do like. I like elements of the football. Sometimes what happens on the pitch is a bit boring, but the stuff around it very, very interesting. I think the issue with these things is when they try too hard to make more of something than is there.
Yeah, right. They try to make you feel something rather than you naturally feeling it. Yeah.
Exactly. Or then don't explore, you know, the downsides.
Was
of the
Sunderland
things,
Till
the romanticisation of all of these, you know, I don't know.
Sunderland Till I Die was the first one, wasn't it? So I guess they...
Yeah, well, that's the one that I think Rob McElhenney's talked about how that's... like. So Humphrey Carr, who we had on the podcast, it's on YouTube if you want to find it, on TV IRL, talked about how he got Rob McElhenney watching that, and that's what got him into these sort of documentaries and sport things, and then into football specifically.
Yeah. And maybe then, he's looking to feel something, you know?
Well, maybe. Who but then, say? Yeah. I mean, so, like, as a lot of people have done, I've been playing as Wrexham and Football Manager this season. So I feel like I know these players quite well.
I do want to hear more about that, but before we go on, I would say, obviously, I hope it would go without saying, an incredible achievement to anyone who creates a documentary series like that. I mean nothing when I sit here and say, oh, I didn't like this one or I like that one. It's worthless opinion. I have no value. Whoever made that, absolutely excellent job. Well done. Please continue talking about Wrexham.
Yes. And...
Would you say you support them now? Do you feel like they're your team?
Oh, I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and they're for Rob McElhenney. So, like, I would, like, in the National League, I don't really care. This is the thing, like, it's weird. So when I was younger, me and my friend used to play, my friend Ander, who, that doesn't matter.
Herrera?
No, Alexander, but he's called Ander.
Right.
But he's now called Alex.
Like Xander from Buffy.
But it's not Xander. Everyone thought it was called Xander.
Ander.
Yeah, that's what I call
him. Does he still go by Ander?
He's called Alex now.
He's called that, well, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my best friends growing up. Right. Anyway, but we used to play Ultimate Soccer Manager 2 and it was brilliant. If anyone's played this and listened to the podcast, you'll remember it was so good.
What was it on?
It's quite funny that it was called Ultimate Soccer Manager and there was a second one.
Ultimate Soccer Manager wasn't ultimate enough.
They had to bring in another one.
It was Totally Awesome 2.
Well, they made another one later on. They tried to make it more fancy, but it was the original charm of this one that worked. It was around about the time that Sensible World of Soccer was kind of going about. It was very basic, but you could it's just so cool. You could build your stadium and you could make it. It had sort of Chris Sawyer-y bits to it where you could see your stadium getting built and stuff. It was cool.
Right.
But we always went for some reason as Halifax Town. So for a long time in my life, I looked out for Halifax Town results. I don't now, but when I was younger, I used to really like them. Same way, lots of people get involved in Football Manager because they start supporting the team. Lots of people support a team because they play them as them in FIFA, stuff like that. But Wrexham, I'd like that documentary a lot. Obviously, I like the people a lot. So I like following the story. It's interesting. And it replicates what I've done a lot of times with Football Manager, getting a small team up to the top leagues and seeing how they do it.
Yeah.
So I've got Wrexham to mid-table Premier League now.
Wow. How many seasons?
I got them back-to-back promoted, winning the league each time except the Championship. I finished second.
game's broken, isn't it? It's a stupid game.
I'm just good at it.
Again.
I'm just good at it.
To the makers of Football Manager. Fantastic. My valueless opinion, but come on, that's so stupid. Friend of the podcast, Paul Ansorge, I was chatting to him last night. He's playing as Wrexham 2. Yeah. He's had back-to-back promotions into the Championship. And I said, is the aim to win the Champions League? And he said, yeah, but also if you do, then the game's fucked, isn't it? Because like you shouldn't be able to do that. Maybe 30 years. You play 30 seasons with Wrexham and you can win the Champions
League. It is hard now,
if
Premier
you win
League,
the Champions League or the Premier League within, what, 6 years or five years?
Oh, that
years
won't happen, though. Like, so it's five, six seasons in them now. It just gets, it's a lot more realistic than it used to be. They want it to be a simulation, Football Manager.
Yeah.
And it is very much like that.
The issue with that, though, is if they made it a complete simulation, it wouldn't be fun, would it?
Well, the thing is that we are very possibly in a simulation right now.
Right. And it explains why I'm not having any fun any of the time.
Well, that's one of the reasons it might not be a simulation, actually, is that because you're not having fun, if you're going to simulate something, why would you make it so there's loads of boring bits?
Exactly. If Sega and Sports Interactive had made this simulation, it would be fun. And I could do things like that I couldn't normally do in real life, like have a good time and, you know.
But we could, I mean, I'm really into this simulation idea at the moment. It's interesting.
I feel like you've been into that for a long time.
Yeah, because I think it's a thing.
Do you want to take this opportunity to talk about aliens? Or
sure. Right into them.
Yeah.
It's to do with, like we talked about earlier, about how time, present, future, past.
It's flat.
It's not flat. It's just, it all exists at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Simultaneity.
So like,
simultaneity.
What we think of as aliens might not be aliens. It might be something that can operate different frequencies between different dimensions.
Humans.
This is a quantum physics theory.
Right.
Of the multidimensional kind of bit and pieces.
Well, of any.
And I am better placed than many people to talk about it on a football podcast.
I would trust you to discuss quantum
physics. I'm very,
physics.
Very smart in quantum physics and numbers.
It's on a different frequency.
Before we finish, though, anyway, Wrexham, like what? I mean, you know, we talked about the idea of winning the Champions League, winning the Premier League with them on Football Manager. What's the reality here? You know, because also, like, yeah, the Hollywood owners, but they haven't got endless money.
No,
in
they
the
don't.
Same way that some actually very, very rich owners.
It's really hard to get out of that league. So the big point for me with Wrexham is that National League is so competitive, and you tend to need like at that level of
you
football.
You just did it in first season though in the game.
Yeah, there's only one automatic promotion spot.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then there's a playoff, right?
Yes.
I can't remember.
So there's only two teams that go up.
It's,
yeah,
it's
is that right?
Playoffs for
because didn't Wrexham lose in the playoffs
six,
last season?
Five, yeah.
No, I think
am I right in saying?
Yeah, they did,
something like that. Yeah. And but the thing is, right? So what I thought was interesting about playing on Football Manager is that the team that I settled on, I knew nothing about the actual Wrexham team before I started doing it.
Yeah.
The team I settled on is exactly the same one that Parkinson plays mostly, like 3-5-2. You got to play a certain way so that the players they've got suit a system that plays like that. You play Ollie Palmer up top because he's a big lad. You get the ball to him. He's good at poaching in the box. Then you can play Paul Mullen, who's a very, very talented player. You can play like a second striker off of him. So they work that and they get the ball forward quickly because you kind of have to do that in National League teams because people sit in a block because the technical level's low. So then you can't, like some teams can play the Guardiola ball and do that sort of bit. It's very hard to coach and very hard to keep the players that do that for any longer than one season because they get picked up and go somewhere else. So then you've got players that can make late runs into the box, like Elliot Lee and Luke Young, the sort of players. Tom O'Connor's a good midfielder, the Irish guy in the middle of the pitch, kind of hold it together.
Scored at the weekend.
And you've just seen Ben Tozer as a centre-back who can hurl a ball about 400 miles, so loads of long throws. Just like the sort of small details you need in teams at that level to take them forward. The guy who can hurl a ball into the box, you've got big lads who can then head it down, win the second ball and score. And the XG in this game, I think I saw the XG philosophy said it was like 3.5 to Wrexham and 0.5 or something to Sheffield United. Well, the goals he scored were, they're all stramashes, really. Yeah. First one was a corner near post. I don't like man-to-man marking. Me and John talked about this earlier. At a corner, and then they score at the near post. Then Wrexham have a couple of injuries that are to really important players. I think Tunnicliffe and Hayden, who are two of their really important defenders.
Yeah.
They come off and have to replace them with players who aren't really defenders. I think, was it Cleverth come on?
Yeah, the two centre-backs went off, didn't
they? Yeah, Cleverth and what's the other boy came on? Oh, Jordan Jones. He's a midfielder, though. So you put them on, they're not really defenders, so you've got to adjust that way. But they held them like for good parts of the game. In the last 20 minutes, I thought Wrexham looked like so good. And the well-deserved goal by Mullen scoring that like clever nutmeg through the keepers. Like, we just couldn't hold out. You sort of sent it. You thought it was coming.
You're 6-7 seasons in on Football Manager. Have you retained any of the original team?
No, I got rid of most of them. The ones that were stood out were McFadzie and O'Connor and Mullen, but mostly they're not really good enough after League 2, League 1. So then you have to start replacing them. Hayden stays. You want to keep your club captains in and stuff like that.
Can we cover some breaking news?
What is it?
Because David Ornstein has just tweeted, Bayern Munich set to sign fullback Joao Cancelo.
Really?
From Manchester City.
Oh, what? Wow. David Ornstein's tweeted that, has he?
14 minutes ago.
14 minutes ago. Well, breaking news. Good Lord. Let's have breaking news reactions to David Ornstein's tweet. Bayern Munich to sign João Cancelo, fullback from Manchester City. John McKenzie, what do you make of it?
It's on loan, yes.
It's on loan.
Not
on loan?
Yes, for the rest of the season. So clearly what's happened is there's been some sort of falling out, I suspect.
Yes. You called him Mr. Cancelo the other day.
Yeah. But yeah, Rico Lewis comes in and João Cancelo can't get back in the team. So
wow. Fascinating stuff. On loan, you say?
Option to buy, though. So it'd just be getting him out the door.
Oh, option to buy.
Not just, you don't want to disrupt the team spirit.
Wow.
He was going to start moaning.
But the second coming of fullbacks disappears.
Yeah.
Look at that.
It's not been very good since the World Cup, though, to be fair.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, you know, let's all tip of the hat to the talented David Ornstein, shall we say, always updating us with what's happening in the football world. Okay, let's have a break now, and when we come back, we'll discuss stuff that wasn't breaking news because we planned it on Thursday. Last week.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. It's the final week of January, and that sound you can hear is clubs frantically trying to get deals over the line before the deadline closes on Tuesday night. Myself, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, and our raft of club experts will be all across the biggest moves this week, and we'll discuss the fallout when the window shuts. So just search for the Athletic Football Podcast on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you listen to your pods.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Everton Football Club, let's discuss Everton. They've featured on the podcast a couple of times in recent weeks for different reasons. Frank Lampard, of course, was let go last week and has been replaced by, we thought it was going to be Marcelo Bielsa for a while, but no, it's Sean Dyche. Much the same, but from a different sort of place, I guess, and with a different sounding voice. You know? But other than that...
Do you want to have a go at it?
The same? What, the Sean Dyche voice?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think if our experience has taught us anything, it was that me doing accents not a good idea.
It's not an accent, it's an impression. It's different.
What if I just take... If I don't do the accent, but I take the gravel tone in my same accent?
No, you want to do more like that, Sean Dyche.
Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Does anybody have a mint?
That's right. The thing is, we play a 4-4-2 and make sure that the fullback pushes up right to the halfway line.
This is good.
Keep everything together.
You sound like, you know, Ellis James.
He sounds like Sean Dyche, is what he sounds like.
But he sounds more like, you know, Ellis James.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ellis James and John Robbins used to do the show where they did an impression of a guy from Australia who would have exactly the same kind of Sean Dyche, but you're like,
Roddy, mate!
You're like that.
Make your voice a bit gravelly for Sean Dyche. I've spoken to him on the phone a few times.
Have you?
That's when he's Australian, yeah.
You've spoken to him on the phone?
Yeah.
What have you spoken to him on the phone about?
Doing research for articles for Telegraph when I used to be a big old journalist.
He wasn't ordering a pizza from you or something, or he accidentally called you when you worked at
the
Argos.
No, he was talking about the leadership qualities of players like Ashley Barnes. He's worked very hard to get to where he is now. Put the things in place to make sure that the players can... reach the potential, then it's up to the player to get there.
Right, okay.
That's it, yeah.
And in your real accent, not the English one, though, just the Scottish one, please. Sean Dyche, do you think he's going to sort the Everton squad? I mean, there's a lot. I can see you again ready to do the accent again. Don't you do it.
You cease now.
Do you think, because their first game against Arsenal the weekend is quite a big, tough opening game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be...
Do your posh English one. That's good as well.
Oh, yes. Arsenal versus Everton. Yeah. So the thing is, Sean Dyche excelled at Burnley using a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
Very disciplined kind of formation, but it's not quite the 4-4-2 you think it is. They push very high. Often the back four becomes a three. They play inverted wingers. It depends on where they go. His off-ball 4-4-2 organisation is key.
Yes.
Because to prevent teams playing against them and scoring many goals, he would keep the 4-4-2 rigid and show the ball wide from the front two, which often becomes 4-4-1-1, which is basically all formations that really matter. It depends where the ball is and where the players go. And so what we'll see against Arsenal with Everton is likely a 4-4-2,
right,
which is more of a 4-4-1-1. The personnel, we don't know.
Well, thanks to Lord Bull. I mean, he's right, though. Lord Bull's right, though, isn't he, John? Because people don't know, do they? They think it's the one thing you said earlier, but then it is actually another thing you also said earlier.
Yeah, Sean Dyche is a bit of an anomaly because people have a very specific idea of him based largely on JJ's impression of him, I think.
Of an anomaly.
Yeah, people talking about him as a manager. Yeah, a manager who will keep your club up at all costs, kind of manager, despite the fact that he's had two managerial jobs. One of them was Watford, which I think was only half a season long. I think he did okay there, but I think they were already going down anyway.
Yeah.
And then maybe qualify me. I'll leave that one up to Steve. How did Sean Dyche do when he was at Watford, Steve? At Burnley, he took that over when they were in the Championship and took them up and kept them in the Premier League for a long time, which isn't really a firefighting manager. It's like a manager.
They were relegated once in that time, I think. He took them back up
the following season. Yeah. So I don't know.
But on a tiny budget as well. Like the job he did, right? So sure enough, it's kind of boring to watch and you knew that they're going to be robust, hard to beat. But the thing is, he had no budget. They bought nobody at all. And all he always went for was people who have strong characters, like a decent technical level, because you have to beat the Premier League. But you'd be players like Jack Cork, that really good for him, Ashley Westwood, like all these players that you don't think would be a phenomenal. Mm. He managed to keep them like going all the time in the Premier League. And then soon enough, as they kept going and going and going towards the end, they kept selling the best players. Tarkovsky went, Chris Wood went, like everyone left. But yet they were still battling against teams who had spent hundreds and hundreds of millions. The money they spent was on making the training ground decent.
Yeah.
Like going to Europe once. They played Aberdeen in the
Derek McInnes's Aberdeen.
Yeah, yeah. Lewis Ferguson scored an overhead kick against them. But they were just the hardest team we could have got in that draw, I think. And they were solid. They were hard to play against.
He's a good manager.
We're going to come back to talk about Aberdeen, but just quickly to your question for Steve Hanke, he's popped in the plan there, that Watford finished the 2011-12 season in 11th place. Dyche took over after Malky Mackay. It was the best finish for 4 years, but the Pozzo family took over and they sacked him.
Right. There we go.
There you go. Yeah.
So, firefighting manager with a mid-table finish at Watford and then, couple of seasons where he's struggling with Burnley.
So maybe he's not what people think he is necessarily. But let's have a quick look at the squad, though, of what he actually has to deal with here at Everton. Of course, we have players like Yerry Mina, Tarkovsky there, Mason Holgate. I was thinking earlier that that fella from Burnley's gone there, hasn't he? What's his
name?
Dwight McNeil be rejoined.
And Tarkovsky,
yeah, they'll be rejoined with Sean Dyche, of course. Damari Gray, Alex Iwobi, who's had a slightly different role this season, but has played excellently well. And of course, we've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who has been, suffered several injuries over the last sort of year, 18 months or so. But is an excellent performer at top level. You would think, JJ Ball, that there is enough quality within the squad for that team not to be getting relegated from the Premier League. Obviously, the circumstances at the moment say otherwise. But you look at the squad list and you think, like, there's definitely enough there, right?
There's some decent enough individual players, but like, it's difficult with some of them. Like Alex Iwobi, technically gifted player. I still don't think he's a midfielder. But I know he's had a couple of good games there, but they've
one of the better players this season, right?
But they're almost getting relegated. So does that matter? Like, he's also like played a lot on the right wing as a right wing back. He doesn't track his men. Like there's loads of goals and examples we can just see simple things that players like him should have coached out of them, and they still do.
Let me say a Scottish player and then see if you react any differently. Nathan Patterson.
Nathan Patterson is a very good right back.
There he goes.
When he plays for Scotland, couldn't get in the Rangers first team either.
Yeah.
So like James Tavernier kept him out. It's a 12 million I think they paid for him. He's got a really high ceiling potential wise. He's not literally within his house, although he may have tall ceilings. But then you think he could play, but then you can't put him into a team that's really struggling relegation because you might dent his confidence, whatever, you want him to keep developing. And also you have Seamus Coleman, who can play there. Yeah. And the shape they've been playing, it depends what suit, like what suits this team. And it's probably a 3-4-3, 5-4-1 formation. But then if you've only got Dominic Calvert-Lewin as your only real striker, like Mope is there as well, sure enough. But you can't really play Mope as just a nine to hold up the play. If you want to play deep and create the ball forward, you need Calvert-Lewin, something like that to play. Playing a 4-4-2, I don't know how that would work unless you could maybe play Iwobi off of Calvert-Lewin in that sort of shape.
Worth saying, Nathan Patterson actually has more minutes than Seamus Coleman this season.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, I'm good.
Seamus Coleman is 34 years old.
I know, that's crazy.
Scary.
It's one of the best guys Frank Lampard ever met.
Yeah.
The other thing to say is the last time Frank Lampard left a job and was replaced by someone else, the first thing they did was sort out the defending. And then they won the Champions League. So, this space.
I mean, let's carry on with the sort of Everton conversation, but let's move on slightly to discuss Anthony Gordon. I think it's a £45 million transfer to Newcastle. I mean, John, you like him, but this is your sort of controversial opinion. Surely he's not worth £45 million, though, is he? I mean, I'm not sure.
When you say I like him, I think my position is...
It actually says in here, John f***ing loves him in the plan, it says.
That was not written by me,
nor
is it an opinion that I hold.
Right, right.
I would ask that you respect the privacy of my family at this time and direct all of your abuse to my Twitter.
This is it. The reason you're reacting in this way is because, obviously, it's fair to say you let your emotions get the better of you last week and your hate for Casemiro came through in the form of a comment that actually wasn't accurate, was it? Would you like to apologise
for that? A comment that actually wasn't accurate.
Do you want to apologise for that now?
I'm not apologising for anything. Well, why are you booing me? I'm right.
Sometimes they say, you know, double down isn't the best option. But with Anthony Gordon...
I get it. Manchester United fans have had not a lot to enjoy in the last few years. They've gone from being a team who used to win everything to a team who, you know, barely win anything. And they have to grab at any of the little... You know,
they have to grab at little bonuses.
That's right. Those little bonuses. They get a player who's okay, and they're like, "Oh, you know, this player's now the greatest."
You saying
in the world.
Casemiro is just okay?
I am not talking about Casemiro at this point
it
in time.
Like you were though.
Would like to distance myself from your comments.
What about Anthony Gordon? Is he okay?
Anthony Gordon. I think people
Why is
think
he the
is
best
either
player ever.
He's. I think people either really. I don't think anyone really likes him, but I think a lot of people really don't like him.
I reckon his mum really likes him.
I think his mum, yeah.
His and his friends.
And his friends. Yeah.
And Sean Dyche. Australian. That's Australian Dyche.
Sean Dyche doesn't need to like him because he's not going to have
it. Lost the accent. You put Australian in there and I've sort of gone wrong with it now.
I think you put Australian in there before.
You've got into his head there with that accent.
Yeah. Seriously, though.
That's right, yeah.
Because Newcastle fans will be listening now, saying they were going to talk about him, and then they started talking about Man United.
And they're like, that Joe Devine,
he's always interrupting,
making John's points sound much more controversial than they are.
Gordon's a great player.
Let's imagine, and we'll reset for all the listeners at home, imagine that didn't happen the last few minutes. Imagine it was all didn't happen, and then go, oh, John, Anthony Gordon.
Right, Stuart Lee.
Anthony Gordon's gone to Newcastle United. £45 million.
Oh, the Beaker folk.
The Beaker folk.
All transfers happening.
What do you think about it?
So I think with Anthony Gordon, there was rumours that he was going to join Chelsea in the summer for £50 million or something, right? Which is obviously too much for a player who is as untested as Anthony Gordon has been. And I think on a backlash against that, there's been a lot of people now who think that Anthony Gordon is rubbish.
Right.
Because I guess that's the natural response to that. I think that the truth is probably somewhere in between. I think Anthony Gordon is probably worth £20 million and will give you a decent rate of return off that. I think he's really good out of possession.
Yeah.
I think he's an exciting ball-carrying player that in certain systems will work well. And I think Newcastle is a system that he'll work well in.
Okay. Well, he's had 1,100 minutes now this season to judge him on that there wasn't before. Interestingly, he's Everton's most booked player. He's got 6 yellow cards this season.
He's got a bit about him.
Bit of fire.
Yeah, he's got a bit of fire, a bit of grit. It's kind of... determined character. He is really quick. I think he's recorded as one of the quickest players in the league. So very direct. So if you're a system that relies on having space in behind, really useful. Players hate playing against people like that. If they're really aggressive and really quick, like, you don't have to deal with that as a defender. So like, though his output, his numbers aren't very good,
There's a big joke about him scoring deflected goals, right? Like all of his goals, I think, have been deflections, right? Something like that. Like big deflections or something.
Right.
Apart from the one against Leeds, but that doesn't count.
Big deflections, a bit like when I suggested you need to apologise for Casemiro.
Yeah, things like that, yeah. Big deflections.
Well, from a Newcastle perspective, JJ, where's he going to play? Chris Wood, I think, has gone out on loan.
To Forest.
I mean, is he going to be a starter? 45 million, you would hope so.
Again, like many transfers, they're just trying to improve the squad and have more options. If anyone gets injured, that's really bad. And they don't have very good, wide, quick options. They have Alan St-Maximin and Miguel Almiron. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So St-Maximin is always injured, and his output is even worse than Anthony Gordon's. So what they've been doing is playing Joe Linton as the left-sided pressing forward, basically, who just helps with keeping their defensive numbers really high. They win the ball in the final third, the third most of any team in the Premier League. They're very good at doing that, but then they drop to a mid-block, then they drop to a little deep compact block. And for more information on that, watch the video on Tifo YRL, which I've made. I took a lot of research.
Great.
I think it's quite good. Okay. And Gordon will play likely on the left or the right of that forward line, replacing one of those two. You could play him up front next to a strike if you want, but Howe doesn't play front two. He always plays with pressing three with an eight becoming a ten to help with the first line of engagement.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Quick trip back to the Championship because Dyche's old club, Burnley, doing quite well under Vincent Kompany, aren't they? Barcelona ball.
That's right, yeah. Burnley left it in a certain way. We played a certain style that worked very well. And what Vinny's done once he's come in is changed that. He's brought new players. They're playing more at a higher tempo.
Yeah.
Lots of movement, fluid movement in between. It's great to watch. I'll tell you what he's done there, Vinny.
Good day.
Yeah. Well, there's another video that we've got on Tifo IRL, which Michael Bailey, very talented Michael Bailey, has done.
Monsieur Michael.
Looked at a real strip down of how they play, and it is just very much like Guardiola ball. It's very much playing out from the back and playing that 2-3 shape in build-up, or 3-2, I should say, in build-up to try and circulate the ball, draw people onto you, and then play through the lines. He's changed a couple of times how they've played during the season to adapt to people playing against them, but they're playing nice football.
Okay.
It's crazy that Vincent Kompany has the same accent as Sean Dyche, though, right?
It is crazy, but, you know, I guess, listen, weirder things have happened. JJ Ball, sounding a little too happy for my tastes, John. I don't know if you agree, so let's get him to talk something about something that will make him sad now. Of course, we recorded the podcast on Monday last week.
Well, Aberdeen, I find this really funny.
We didn't have time to discuss what happened to Aberdeen in one of the Scottish Cup competitions, I'm
again,
trying
maybe.
To say. the Scottish Cup competitions. That's terrible. Yeah. But Darvel, which is, I mean, sounds like a kind of, you know.
They're in the sixth division. It's like a juniors team.
It's in Ayrshire.
It's in Ayrshire.
I'm reliably informed.
There we go. Okay,
by my Ayrshire friends.
It's like a team your mates could conceivably play for.
Team in Scotland, which does not mean the same as a sixth division team in England.
No.
I mean, honestly, that's, you know, what are we actually talking about?
It's
the best player of your friends.
Oh, like you could conceivably have mates who play for them if you just live in that area.
And they beat Aberdeen.
They beat Aberdeen 1-0. They didn't just beat them 1-0, they played them off the park. Like, I'm not exaggerating. I watched it and I was actively like willing them to win. I was like fuck these guys. Aberdeen, like, get them, like, beat them 2-3-0. When Aberdeen were about to score, I was like, no, Aberdeen scored. It was a terrible offside decision. The guy was about 5 yards on.
Yeah.
Leighton Clarkson plays for Liverpool, but he's on loan. Breaks the offside trap by about 5 or 10 yards. Gets in behind, squares it. Aberdeen score. And I was like, please be offside. Which is weird because I really like... Aberdeen's results affect my mood.
It sounds like you got your priorities in order.
Yeah, well, it has an adverse effect on my weekend when we lose. And at the moment, we're losing. We have the worst goal expected goals by a mile in the Premiership. Really embarrassing. The manager got fired straight after it. But this result, for context, is one of, if not the most humiliating, embarrassing defeats in Scottish Cup, if not Scottish football history.
Yeah.
Like, Bonacord once, I think they either lost or won 38-0. I can't remember what the thing was.
Bonacord is a team. I thought they were an indie band.
Well, I mean, I didn't see them play at Tunnels anytime I was there. So it's really poor. But
there we go.
The fallout of it afterwards is that people... So obviously that's humiliating. Aberdeen were already in a run. Most of the fans, I'd say the large majority, 90, 95% of them want the manager, Jim Goodwin, to have been fired after this game and before it, actually.
Jim Goodwin. Jim Badloss was the one that got sacked, right?
Yeah, they can do any number of them. More like inadequate defeat, sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's loads of things you can do with that name. Anyway, he did very well at St Mirren.
I feel like I've been chastised.
Just, well,
yeah, nice one, mate.
Stop stealing my jokes.
You're going to say Darvel superheroes next, aren't you? Yeah.
But for context of it all, like, Jim Goodwin did very well at St Mirren. Aberdeen want to be the third best team. It's really very hard to do it, even though you've got the biggest budget, because you've got to play expansive football in Scotland. It's very difficult to do, because to do that, you've got to play a high line, and you've got to play a high press, probably, to be able to like do that. And you open up the pitch and have nice passing football. You need technical players to do that. Technical players, not always, but tend to lack the kind of grit and strength that you get from the sort of players you could characterise or stereotype from like the UK or Ireland, you know, the kind of, not hoofers, but just strong players who can pass the ball 10 yards, but most likely will go sideways, and then they'll be in the mix to head it in for a goal.
Yeah.
Right? So Jim Goodwin did well with St Mirren. They played all right football. Aberdeen tried to play this possession-based attacking football under Stephen Glass. Didn't work very well. The underlying numbers show it was actually working quite well. Got rid of him. Jim Goodwin's come in, and the underlying numbers are incredibly bad. Like, just horrific. And he's managed to last that long. He played against Darvel, and it should have been the manager at a moment where you say, right, obviously, this is, even me who thinks you shouldn't fire managers, because it's just, it's one off, maybe the players aren't turning up for you. They got played off the park, it looks like bad coaching, or you've lost the respect of the players and they're not listening to your instructions.
Yeah.
It's one of those two things. Either way, the only real way past this is to probably change manager and move on. There's no real way out of it.
Shake it up.
So the board, maybe admirably, say, do you know what? We're going to give you another week. You'll see this, loads of clubs have this, where it's just like, bad result, right, gone, because it's toxic in the fans, get rid. They kept him another week, because you never know. Maybe that's a turning point where suddenly after that you turn around, they put a lot of faith in this manager, maybe they can turn it around. And they lost 6-0 to Hibs on the weekend. another one of the most abysmal performances I've ever seen.
Good lord.
Unbelievably bad, and he got fired and left 19 minutes after full time.
Yeah, okay, fine. Fine, thanks, JJ. For that, appreciate that. We will go for a break now, and when we get back, we have a few more things to discuss before the podcast is over. Okay, we return. Before we start, I did see a fun comment that I thought summarised you very, very well, JJ, from last week. It was a comment that started with us discussing cows, and then it did a little dialogue, a little script of an imagined version of what you would say. And I said something about cows, and then it said, JJ, colon, it said, I knew someone in Aberdeen who had a cow once. It's perfect. The number of times you do bring up something.
Is this on ChatGPT you're talking about?
No. No. What?
I thought you meant, did you make up this? What? What are you talking about?
No. I just said someone commented on the podcast last week.
Oh.
Riffing on the fact that regularly, whatever we talk about, you have some way of relating it back to Aberdeen.
Well, you just talk about what you know, don't you?
Aberdeen.
Yeah, that's where I'm from. Yeah.
Or ChatGPT, which is clearly just on your mind.
It's the, I mean, have you used it? Yeah, it's...
No.
I use it all the time.
It's become 40% of the content of your it's topics of conversation.
It is the very start of the future of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
AI is a both very exciting and incredibly...
Do you like the film Her?
I don't think I've seen Her.
You should watch Her. If you're into ChatGPT, you should watch the film Her with Joaquin Phoenix. Scarlett Johansson plays
Wacky Phoenix.
Scarlett Johansson plays an AI.
I assume it's some sort of comedy because
Phoenix
is. Which is the other AI film with what's his name? Isaacs in it. Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs from Harry Potter.
Is he in
he
Harry
plays
Potter?
Malfoy's dad, doesn't he? Jason Isaacs. Yeah, I don't know what that film is though.
The guy with the beard. Who's the guy with the beard who? Quite attractive dude. He was in the film.
The guy with the beard. The attractive guy with the beard.
He was in the.
You're trying to get us to say,
you know,
John
the country music one.
Oh, Bradley Cooper.
No, the country music one with Carey Mulligan in it. The guy who looks like Adam Park, our social operations.
What
dude.
The Elvis film?
No, not Elvis.
Who are you? Okay, we have got to work this out before we move on. Well, who are you talking about? Which country music film? Is John saying, type Steve, and then he says nothing else. Yeah.
Not Jason Isaacs.
Our colleague Adam Park is handsome. I think that's what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes.
Not Jason
this
Isaacs.
This is a long way around.
Jason Segel. No. Is it a Jason?
Carey Mulligan.
Carey Mulligan, country music.
The film is called...
Oh, what, recently? The one about the...
The guy who's trying to make it in the country music world and everything goes wrong for him. It is called Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, Inside Llewyn Davis.
Who's he?
He's Oscar Isaacs.
Oscar Isaacs.
Not Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, you so can see where I got clarification.
Oscar Isaacs, not in Harry Potter, but would have been
but
good.
But fine beard.
He's in Star Wars.
Fine beard.
Very attractive.
Attractive man.
Yeah. And it's not country music, it's folk music. And if you'd said that, we all would have guessed that film.
Sorry.
So that's very disappointing. Why were you talking about him again?
I can't remember.
Looks like Adam
Park. Oh, no, he was in an AI film recently.
Was he?
Yes.
Let's now find out called... what that one was. Oh, it was called Ex Machina.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. So you knew all of this. This is on you, not me.
You said Ex Machina.
Well, yeah, obviously, if I'd have named the film, it would have been fine.
Strange path. Now, listen.
I don't think he was in Ex Machina.
He was.
Ex Machina, yeah. Steve, listen, mate. If you're going to interrupt the podcast, you better be coming at us with facts. Otherwise, you're going to get slapped back.
2015 Ex Machina.
Terminator is an AI film.
Terminator is an AI film, yeah. Mm. I mean, her, very different sort of AI film
is
to both of these films.
A killer cyborg robot in her?
iRobot.
Then I won't be watching.
No, this is the thing, though, because it, relative to your interest in ChatGPT and its function and
just
fulfillment.
AI generally that I'm into.
Like, the point is, the Scarlett Johansson character is Joaquin Phoenix's AI. It's a new product in this kind of semi-futuristic world. And, she's a digital assistant, but she becomes much more than that over time. And it's about how the world changes and their relationship changes throughout the course of the film. It's an excellent film. Very, very good film.
It raises meta-level questions about...
Why are you looking at me like that? You love ChatGPT, so boring compared to her. Watch her. Watch her and then tell me it's not a good film. And don't you sigh at me when I talk about sci-fi. How dare you? You always coming in here talking about aliens and talking about how time isn't in one direction. And then you sigh at me when I say her's a good film. How dare you? Tell me instead about Moises Caicedo, though. Because let's go through the timeline of Moises Caicedo. Very interesting now. Chelsea, a week or two ago, bid £55 million for Moises Caicedo. Moises Caicedo of Brighton. That was rejected without consideration, according to reports. Arsenal then bid £60 million, which you would assume would go the same way. To our surprise, Caicedo himself tweeted a statement thanking the club for all of their support, which, I mean, really seems key that he must be leaving, because nobody else would do that in any other situation. But, of course, he's not leaving. Tony Bloom, the Brighton chair, did not relent on that bid. And Arsenal bid £65 million since, which, as reported by David Ornstein, has been rejected. It's kind of an odd situation. It's not unclear whether he thought he was going at that time or whether that was something to kind of apply pressure to Brighton. But, I mean, what the hell's going on there?
Well, Arsenal want him. And they have bid money for him.
Right, right.
Did he not get some new agents recently?
Maybe.
Who are determined to get him a big move.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
And they're making some interesting decisions in how they're going about that.
It seems a little bit embarrassing to do that, though, to tweet your thanks.
Well, they're just going like to force their hand. And they'll be like, they're thinking that, I mean, this is not what, I don't know what they're thinking, but the thinking might be if it were like a Laurel and Hardy movie or something, like, go and just do it because then they'll have to let you go.
Then they'll have to let you go.
You sure? Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's not the same, but I feel a bit like it's like sort of maybe wanting to work at a different company and then tweeting your resignation without having a job offer. I mean, it's sort of...
But it's different with footballers, isn't it? Because I guess the point is that the worker in this instance has basically a unique value that no one else can really recoup. So
sure.
I suppose if Caicedo wanted to, he could refuse to play and then you're in a bit of a pickle. But yeah. Brighton do have a history of being able to hold on to their players and get more value for them. I remember Ben White was on loan at Leeds for the season. They got promoted. Leeds tried to buy him in the summer and they pushed, I think they pushed all the way up to about 30, 35 million. Brighton refused and then sold Ben White the following summer to Arsenal for 50 million. So Brighton obviously smart when it comes to making these sorts of decisions. So
why does everybody want him?
Well, Moises Caicedo is considered a good player due to his technical abilities, physical attributes and tactical understanding. He has a powerful shot and good dribbling skills.
Where are you reading this from?
ChatGTP.
Yeah, I asked ChatGPT why people want to buy Moises Caicedo.
Yeah.
Additionally, his ability to read the game and make quick decisions in tight spaces make him an asset in midfield.
Uh-huh.
That's not my words.
Further illustrating why you are not required here in your job. Right.
Well, I mean, I would use that and I would supplement it and make it more interesting.
You'd put a joke in
there. He's basically a very good player. I think when
you'd
Caicedo,
say it in Sean Dyche's accent.
But can't you tell ChatGTP to put a joke in there as well and it'll do it for you?
The thing with Caicedo is...
ask it to put a joke in then in that now.
It can't do jokes. You can ask it to do right stuff in the style of like Norm Macdonald and that, and it can do that. Anyway, okay. Caicedo is a very good player, but he's good at lots of things, not exceptional at any. He's a really just a decent player, and I think they're really important at high level teams that you have players who can cover a few different positions, whatever.
Yeah,
he's just a good solid player. Has a good engine on him. He's determined. Clearly, he wants to. He's very ambitious, by judging by what he's trying to do this window, and that's a good thing to have as a character for your player. But like you saw him in the World Cup, decent. Can play as a 6 or an 8, a couple of different positions. He'd be very useful for Arsenal, either as cover for the 6 or 8 position, or just replacing one of them at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, you mentioned already, John, Brighton, good track record of selling their players. Brighton sales in 22-23 this season so far. Marco Correa, 65.5 million euros. Yves Bissouma, of course, for 30 million euros. Leandro Trossard has just gone to Arsenal for 24 million euros. Neil Mopé went for 12 to Everton. And obviously last summer, Ben White for 60, Dan Byrne for 15. It's a lot of cash.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. And I think the reason why they're able to make so much value is because they have a very interesting model, which I like to call a buy-to-loan model. So they bring in players before they've peaked in value, and then they send them off on loan somewhere to help them develop, which is obviously like a risk management strategy, because I suppose if they don't work out, then you're going to lose a little bit of money. But the idea being that the ones that work out are going to cover your losses elsewhere. Mm. And the examples of players who that's worked for includes McAllister, Alexis McAllister, who was a World Cup winner. They brought him in from a team in Argentina called Argentinos. They set him back on loan for the second half of the season when they'd bought him. And then they sent him on the following season on loan to, I want to say Boca Juniors, but it might be River Plate.
Mm-hmm.
Steve will sort that out. Won't he?
One or the other. Yeah. It'll be fine.
So it was about a year and a half before he ever played for Brighton. And yeah, they monitor their loan players very carefully.
Yeah.
They used to have Mike Weir as their loans manager, but I don't think he is anymore. I think he's their director of football now that Dan Ashworth has gone. But they take their loan system very seriously. Other players, Karim Mitoma, who everyone's talking about at the moment, was sent on loan, I believe, to Belgium. Just thinking of other players. Dan Byrne as well was, I think, loaned out immediately when he came in, when they brought him in as well. Not Mike Weir.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. This is interesting for two reasons. One, firstly, when you say I like to call it the buy to loan, it makes it sound like you've come up with that. Are you saying that's yours, patented? Or are you saying you just like to... Like, so it would be the same as me saying, like, when I go to the toilet, I like to call it the toilet. is it the same as that?
It was more a joke than a question. Two years ago, I wrote an article with Josh Hobbs at Analytics FC,
mm-hmm.
and we coined the phrase there. But I'm sure someone else has
Did
used
you really?
It. We wrote it, yeah, and called
you
it.
And here now with this audience, you claim the coinage of that.
Sure. So. I mean, when it comes to these sorts of things, obviously it's not a particularly groundbreaking term, is it? Right. So I'm happy to be proven wrong on this one.
What you're saying is you'd prefer if everyone in the industry called it the McKenzie when you buy a player and loan them out. That's what they should.
Yeah,
be
that's
called.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
What would you if there was a bull? If they're doing the bull on that one, what would you like that to be?
It's a dance like the monkey.
Right. Okay.
Doing the bull.
Well, let's talk more about transfers now, because a bit of a kind of watershed window in some ways, or a bit of an interesting time, John. Lower level Premier League teams buying lots of risky players for lots of money in a way that maybe wouldn't have happened in the years gone by.
Yeah, there's something interesting, I think, happening at the lower levels of the Premier League, which is... We've already talked about how Brighton are buying players and then loaning them back to their teams or loaning them to other teams at a different level to then enhance their development. But we've seen a few players be bought directly from risky markets, I'd say. Mm. So Victor Christiansen has just been signed by Leicester for, I think, £17 million or euros. That makes him the most expensive signing from Denmark ever.
Right.
And usually I think that he would have gone... via a stepping stone country, so probably like somewhere like Belgium.
Yeah.
Leicester have gone straight in for him, so they're cutting out the middleman, I suppose, getting the heads up on it. I suppose the benefit to them is that, you know, if he does well in Belgium and then they buy him, they're probably spending 30 million on him, so they are saving some kind of money, but there's a little bit more risk attached. And there's just been a few other players signed this window by teams in that of that ilk that have risk attached. So John Duran being signed from MLS, mm-hmm. has had a decent season there, but being brought into Villa could be considered kind of risky. And then Danilo going to Nottingham Forest from Palmeiras in Brazil.
Yeah.
Because of the Brexit regulations on work permits for footballers, the market's changed a lot because there's certain, it's a points-based system now, and depending on where you are, it's easier or harder to get points. Brazil is one of those places where it's much easier to get points because the Copa Libertadores and the Copa Sudamericana are now counted quite high in terms of the points that you can accrue.
Yes.
So there's a lot of players in South America now who, say you're playing at the best team in Bolivia and they get into the Libertadores and you play all the minutes for them.
You can qualify.
So those players, I think, would previously have been, would have been much harder to get and previous work permit system. So yeah, Danilo from Brazil coming from Palmeiras straight to Nottingham Forest, and I think that's going to be the thing now. Is our Premier League's now going to try and cut, like, find value simply by taking risks and buying players early and hoping that they can save the money on those in that way, rather than waiting for them to go particularly via Portugal or Spain, which is what South American players tend to do.
Well, there's another element to this as well, isn't there? Speaking of saving money, UEFA, I believe, in the summer, I've got a cap contract lengths of 5 years for everywhere, which I guess is probably a reaction to what's just happened at Chelsea, right?
Yeah, we talked about this last week. Mikhailo Mudryk given an 8.5 year contract, I think, which is against UEFA laws in principle. Apart from there's a loophole which said, depending on the country's own rules, and the UK doesn't have any rules on that. So Mikhailo Mudryk was able to be signed for an 8.5 year contract. But UEFA now making that a hard and fast rule that you can't sign anyone over 5 year contracts. Mm. And to be honest, I think that's a good rule. I think that's workers' rights principles in play there, which is good.
I agree. But I wonder if it'll mean that anyone tries to squeeze through any more signings before the end of the January transfer. I mean, we're talking about this on Monday. I believe deadline day is tomorrow, Tuesday. Mm. Which is the day of release for this podcast. So we may well have seen some more. But let's move on. One more thing before we finish for today's podcast. A little segue to Serie A, John, where AC Milan, a bit of a crisis. They lost 4-0 to Lazio a couple of weekends ago, which, you know, Lazio, I think, placed just one place behind them in Serie A. So not devastating in terms of the difference between those teams, but nobody wants to lose 4-0 to a nearby rival. Having said that, they just lost 5-2 to Sassuolo. And Sassuolo are a tiny team that come from a place where 30 people live in the village, right? I mean, not that, but obviously.
I don't know the population of Sassuolo, if that's what you're asking
me. It's small, and they're a relegation contender who, you know, it's kind of a miracle that they're in Serie A in the first place. To ship 5 goals to a relegation candidate, what the hell's going on at Milan?
Yeah, it's really funny how quickly things change, because I think if you remember back to the first match day after the World Cup break in Serie A, Napoli were top of the table by a chunk of points. Mm. They lost their opening game back against Inter, and Milan won 2-1 against Salernitana. At that point, it looks like there's going to be a title race. We fast forward to the present day, and Juventus, who had a run of form, were docked 15 points, so they've dropped away. Yeah. And yeah, if we look at the actual table, Milan had gone from being sort of comfortably second to now being outside of the Champions League spaces. Yeah. It is quite close around there. But like, Juventus have dropped out of that top four now because of that 15-point deduction. So in theory, that should have made their position in second place even more comfortable. But now Inter are there. There's Lazio, Atalanta ahead of them as well. And Jose Mourinho's Roma as well are playing quite well at the moment too. So yeah, Milan have seemingly fallen off a bit of a cliff. I think you could argue that this sort of thing was maybe going to happen because they are a team who are particularly reliant on individual players in possession, and they're also an out of possession focused team, so they get a lot from being quite intense in terms of their pressing, but yeah, they've dropped off in a big way. And you're thinking, I think the next game they have is the Milan derby coming up, so they'll be playing Inter, who are in second place. If Inter win that, which and they're obviously the form team compared to Milan, then you know, the gap between the top and Milan is gone. And then I think Milan have got Spurs in the Champions League as well. So
coming up, okay. Yeah,
the club crisis derby, I suppose.
Well, a clarification. I said that Sassuolo were a relegation team. Currently, they're actually on 20 points in 16th place in relegation spots in Serie A. Hellas Verona on 12. Sampdoria on 9, and then a team I've never heard the name of, but I think you'll enjoy this, JJ. Cremonese. Cremonese. They are bottom of Serie A with 8 points. So Sassuolo, not quite as bad as I made them out to.
Well, if they hadn't beaten Milan, as you might have expected them not to, they'd be on 17 points, 5 points off relegation.
That's true.
And they would also be in 17th place. Just above the relegation zone. Don't beat yourself up too much.
I won't beat myself up that hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to get these things right as a perfectionist. You want, as someone who only intends ever to say things that have value and are accurate, you want to get these things right.
I've said a lot of things wrong on this podcast. So
that's true. And last week, that thing you said about Casemiro was wrong, wasn't it? Or at least that's what everyone said when they commented afterwards. I can't remember if that was, if it was wrong or if it was just the people that said it was wrong. But, you know.
Do we just stop?
Can we just go now? Can we go now?
That's the end of the TIFO Football Podcast. Thank you for joining us this week to JJ Bull the Bullet.
Yes.
And to John McKenzie. I forgot your name then for a second. How about that?
Thanks, Joe.
You're very welcome. A couple of Sean Dice. It's quite good,
isn't
it?
Yeah.
Do you think it was good?
Do you want to do some more Sean Dice?
Yeah.
Shall I open ChatGPT and see what it says?
I think you should, Sean, yeah. I think if we did put into ChatGPT, I need to find it. No, I've lost
a song
it, lost it.
In the style of Sean Dyche.
I'm from South Africa now. Sean Dyche is now from South Africa.
I like to do that accent as well.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, there we go. That wasn't even intended.
That's right, no, Joe. Yeah, that is a noise you make when you finished a podcast. So.
Steve Hankey, Mr. Hankels, let's hear your Sean Dyche as a goodbye.
Goodbye.
Wow,
that's Bane, isn't it?
Bane from Batman.
Yeah, that's Sean Dyche when he enters the nether dimension.
Sean Dyche was nearly born in the gravel pit. But what can you say? And Jamie, the video man. Thanks, Jamie. There he goes. Big hand up from Jamie. Fine. We'll be back next week with more. Oh, of course, Seb Stafford-Blaw. He's not here again. You know, is he even alive? We don't actually know. Could he be? What could we have done with him?
For the doubt of listeners, Seb's very much alive.
You know, I'm saying that if let's just say hypothetically he'd been fired from the podcast or something, how long do you think we could keep it going that we just said he just wasn't here this week and people wouldn't ask?
Do you know what we could do? Artificial intelligence is getting to get to a point where it can learn what Seb might say in certain situations.
To be fair, yeah, Seb is quite a simple
and
guy.
And if we can just then use like deep fake stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or just build a character based on what Seb looks like, based on his room he's in.
Easy.
We could replace him with a robot.
We've got enough of
all of us robots.
A back catalogue. We can just clip all of the words he's ever said and just make it into a.
That's true.
Into his voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think even the best artificial intelligence could replace the calming, soothing
Seb.
Yeah.
Right. I think it could. No. I think if you got a, if
I really
got
like it. We just kept Seb
AI and you put it inside of a potato. It would be kind of the same. Kind of the same.
I mean, yeah, but then that would, yeah. I mean, at the moment we're creating intelligence. I mean, we have, so if we are in a simulation.
I wouldn't describe the last.
That's the end of the TIFO Football Podcast. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, bienvenue.
Athletic.